So the platform is all data-driven. You need humans to develop it. However, I will say that coming back to the question always of humans versus machines, inherently, there is always going to be a human factor on top of social data, particularly when there is more qualitative data, to actually be able to apply it. So in the application of the data, that's where you need humans.
Welcome to AI for Business Growth, the podcast from pioneering artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all business people, from startup entrepreneurs right through to Fortune 500 companies. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech to help you and your business to navigate through and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow businesses.
Today's show is all about how to identify and understand your target audience using artificial intelligence. As most marketers know, when it comes to connecting with your perfect customer and your perfect audience, you need to identify both who they are, but then discover actionable insights that are going to help you inform your strategies to grow your business. My guest today is Carlos Serra from the company Audience with an S, which is a company that uses artificial intelligence to help companies grow their customer and audience bases by finding, identifying, and connecting with individuals and audience segments, including those they don't even know about. Welcome, Carlos. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me in the show.
Can you tell me maybe a little bit about yourself and what led you to Audience?
Yeah, sure. I was an investment banker in technology, and how this came about, I was doing a review of the marketing advertising technology space. And I met the people at Social Bro, which is the original name of Audience, Social Browser. The Bro was the browser. Mm-hmm. And that's how, after a couple of years working together and working with them on their fundraising, I joined the company. And since then, we pivoted, because back in the day, it was Twitter and Instagram marketing tool. We pivoted to audience insights when we understood the power of social data for segmentation.
Interesting. It's very interesting, because what led me to Audience was that I interviewed lots of different AI companies, and two of them had the same component within them. So it led me to ask them if that was from somewhere else. And it turned out that they were both using Audience as an integral component in their offering. I mean, they had lots of other things around it, wrapped around it, but it was very interesting that they chose to use Audience as their, you know, one of the components. Why do you think that is?
Look, I'm going to work from a landscape perspective right now. Mm-hmm. All the time we are listening to the power of AI, to the power of some of the ML models. And also we hear social data, the social data component out of it. Reality is, when people are talking about social data, they do it in two ways. One might be analytics, which is the quantitative element, how actually accounts are growing or not growing, or how much engagement they are getting, mm-hmm. which is informing particularly sponsorships or just understanding who is winning or not in certain spaces. On the other side, most of the people, when they talk about big data and social data, they talk about conversational analysis, gathering all the conversations that they are happening on social media and trying to understand them. Mm-hmm. Fun fact is, that's just a residual element of the social data iceberg. Mm-hmm. If you think about, in the case of Audience, what we are trying to do is audience intelligence powered by social data. What that really means is, we believe that audiences should not be understood via demographics. It should be understood via their hobbies, their passions, their values, their personalities. And in order to do so, you have follower graphs. What people are following or not determines what their hobbies and passions are, as well likes graph. What people are liking rather than talking about also determines what they like. So I guess that there is a very small subset of companies that they are working with these data sets within social data. Mm-hmm. And that's why they tend to come to a company like Audience, because there are not many trying to work with that data asset for consumer insights.
Yeah. One of the things that when I played around with audience that I found really fascinating was that it was putting in some social media handles, but then it was analyzing the segments, the different segments, with such depth and clarity. So not only who they are, but their interests and their purchasing behavior and their influences and their media consumption. I mean, it was incredibly powerful. What kind of things or how do you think companies then use this kind of really in-depth data for their marketing?
So two things there. First, the segments. I want to cover that part of the segments. So segmentation, the way we do it, if you do segmentation with social data, particularly with conversational analysis, typically it will be topic segmentation. People are talking about pharma overall, but then within pharma, they are talking about drug discovery, or they might be talking about the illness itself or some trials that might be happening. So that's topic analysis. Yes. If we look at the audiences, the way we use data to segment is, there are several ways, but the most important one that we use is interconnectivity. Who knows who? So by actually segmenting an audience by who knows who, it means that they might all be pharma, working in the pharma sector. However, that segmentation will allow to differentiate potentially doctors from pharma marketers and potentially some scientists there. So that in itself, it's already powerful. The second part that you are talking about is now I can see their interests, their passions, their affinities. What that really means is sources of influence. So how do you actually use that information? It depends on what role you have. If I'm in PR and comms, that's great to understand who do I have to create content about or create content with to reach my ultimate audience. If I'm running sponsorships, it might be a matter of who I should actually be putting my money on. If I'm working and so on, like every role will have something different, all the way down to performance marketing, where how do I actually establish my targeting in the different channels, whether it's YouTube or Facebook or whatever, to be able to have a much better and efficient deployment of my paid media. So that's what it can be used. It can be used depending on the role. It's quite elastic.
It's very versatile. I mean, even things like if you had events, you could find out who were the right speakers that would attract those segment audiences and things like that, I assume. And with the PR, who are the right journalists that would be the ones to get covering your specific area, I guess.
So that's very interesting. It's one of the use cases that we find very often. Not only because you want to find who are the audience-centric event guest speakers that you want to bring to your event. And that means that it's in a certain way what you want is, imagine that I had a conservation, nature conservation event, and I want to invite Greta, right? Everyone wants to invite Greta Thunberg. However, how do I find the next 1,000 Gretas that I could actually be invited that could have resonance with the ultimate audience and drive more people to my event?
Exactly.
That's what we are trying to do. It's not looking at nature conservation, who are the main influencers. It's, this is my audience. So let's say I'm in Houston and have a nature conservation event. Who are the Gretas that I should be inviting, determined by who are the uniquely followed or uniquely affinity towards my audience?
So interesting. And so it feeds into so many different areas. What kind of things do you think you're seeing that businesses use it for the most? Because it looks like there's so many different use cases.
There is a lot around consumer insights and creating better personas. So insight departments at the brands, they are using it for that. We've seen a lot as well around PR and comms, as I described, what are the right podcasts or YouTube channels that I should be working on and having resonance, or journalists. It's a big combination, but more and more often what we see is market research organizations using audience for consumer insights. It's if you think about it, if I have the opportunity to get an audience and ask them, the question on what is trending in your hobbies and your interests and your passions today. And then I can do it every day. I can ask the same question. That's complementing the current research. And that's where we see a lot of adoption nowadays. It's quite quick. It's language agnostic, which for me, it brings me, you were talking about AI, so I have to talk about that. A lot of the AI, typically, it's built around language models and it's language dependent because we are working with likes graphs and follow graphs, essentially. Who do you follow and who do you like? That means that it's language agnostic and it allows you to drive research at scale, multi-country, without being dependent on the source of the data, whether we have the right ML model for that or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so could you maybe... There were thought of two things. Firstly, could you maybe give a more in-depth case study of how a company has used the tool and what kind of results they got once they started implementing it?
Do we want a pharma or a non-pharma one?
Non-pharma.
But let's go with a non-pharma one for this case. Largest sports brand, Manchester United, there was a big polemic around their US owners back in the day. There was, I think, 2 million tweets, something like that, where everyone was talking about them, potentially saying that they should leave the club, etc. And the question from Manchester United was, hang on, there is a lot of noise, but I don't know who these people are. What they wanted to know is, what are my fans and my season ticket holders thinking about this subject? So what do you do next? So you go, and rather than looking at the whole conversation that leave the club maybe was high up, and you say, okay, everyone wants that. However, when we segmented the conversation, we said, let's take the people here. We segmented, and now we have core Manchester United fans, season ticket holders, and then there were other groups like Liverpool fans, Premier League fans, other types of fans. And now, rather than looking at what is the most mentioned keyword, which is typically what you get, or the most mentioned keyword by geography, now you are able to say, what are the point of views within the conversation? What are my season ticket holders saying about this subject versus my core Manchester United fans? And by the way, we don't care about the rest. That segmentation of the conversation to find point of views, subtleties, and nuances was a good case study, but I'm going to take it all the way down to any subject. Yeah. Sometimes the power of audience is to combine it with the conversation so you can get the point of views and that differentiation in opinion that at the end of the day is behaviors, differentiated behaviors that each community has. So coming back to pharma, That's why I was saying if we want a pharma case study, if we think about pharma, it's the same. Sometimes people are talking about any drug out there and the conversation is quite messy because you don't know whether they are experts, they are not experts, are these consumers, they are not consumers. With this type of segmentation, you are able to differentiate the scientific community from the non-scientific community. Mm-hmm. And that way you can get the two point of views, not only that you can also identify who are the most resonant sources of influence in case either you want to market to them or you want to cherry pick some of them for further surveys, interviews, questions, etc., to further develop. And when you make that question, now you have the original information that you had from the point of view. You already have a conversation jumper there.
Interesting. And on your website, there's two tools that you have. So you've got the Audience Insights and the Audience Connect. I think the one that I know is the Audience Insights. What is the difference between the two tools?
Yeah, Audience Connect is a Twitter marketing tool, simple as that. Everyone knows Twitter as one network where there is a lot of noise, etc. A channel that maybe I'm not putting all my advertising into because it's not where the biggest audience is living at. However, that Twitter marketing tool, what it allows you is to get the full power of Twitter for a couple of things that they have. One is, and that's very powerful and compliant, is being able to create the ultimate custom audiences. Custom audiences are, when you go to Twitter ads natively, you can say, target people who follow Gucci. And what Twitter will do is they will look at Gucci followers and they will model the average Gucci follower, how they look like, and they will target those without being maybe Gucci followers. So I will target some Gucci followers and some non-Gucci followers based on those average traits. What Audience does is it cuts the line and says, you want Gucci followers? Okay. Do you want Gucci followers who don't follow Versace, who, by the way, they are doctors? And you are able to build very powerful audiences that makes you very cost-effective in the way you deliver that advertisement. At the same time, Twitter, if we rewind a little and we look at, you can do network graph analysis to identify the biggest sources of influence, right? Mm-hmm. So what we are going to do after this show is I could create an audience of who are the influential people to your podcast. Mm-hmm. And then we are going to actually do advertisement just to those people, not people like them. So we get a list of the top 2,000 influential people to the audience in this podcast, and we'll actually distribute this interview. And maybe we pay $200, no more than that. Mm-hmm. This is when you are not Coca-Cola, you need to have budget-efficient tools like that to get the full power of Twitter, which you cannot do in any other network. So that's what Audience Connect does.
Wow. It's really interesting. Do you have any favorite kinds of projects or clients?
Yeah, I have favorite kinds of projects. I also like the ones that they are not actually flashy and everyone knows about them. In particular, I remember a couple of years ago, there was an event right before COVID, actually. Mm-hmm. It was a cycling event in the north of England, a foundation called Thinking of Oscar that an IBM employee set up for his son, who had a weird illness and he passed away. And he needed to bring cyclists to the north of England. So he spent £150 on an influencer audience of 3,000 people around cycling in England. And he got even Olympians and cycling superstars to retweet his event and help with fundraising. So that meant that even someone with no marketing team and no time and no money was able to gather attention and be able to drive people there. So that type of project is one that I'm always very happy with. And obviously there are lots of other flashy companies like Manchester United or Kantar where we can actually play and develop cool use cases.
Very interesting. What do you think is the hardest part or the most difficult part of what you do to explain to new clients when they're planning to use it?
Shiny objects. There are too many shiny objects around. Things look the same, but they are not the same. Just because it has four wheels and a steering wheel, it looks like a car, but it's a plastic. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
So it's difficult today. Everyone is talking about AI, ML, social data, big data, they have dashboards, they have visualizations, but it's difficult sometimes to know how tools combine with each other. This is an emerging market. There are many tools evolving, developing. That's why the approach we've taken is to take a step back and say, I'm not going to compete for attention. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the influential people in the market. Who are those? The other vendors. I'm going to go to every vendor in the market. I'm going to actually say, you and I, we are complementary. Our users, they need to understand how we are complementary and we should partner. So rather than being a destination platform, being an ecosystem enabler, that's what we've taken. So the most difficult thing we used to have is compete for attention. Once we started to work with our other vendors that we were complementary with and creating solutions for the users, it was much easier because suddenly you come to the user with something that says, if you use A and B in this way, that's how you are going to win. And now it's much easier. So today, my biggest thing and where I spend most of the time is working with other vendors to create solutions with the stack of insights and actions that our clients are using.
And that's how I found you as well. Exactly. So the software does a lot. You know, it pulls out the segments. It gets all the granular detail around the segment. So whether it is around your brand or around a topic or a competitor or a specific influencer, etc. So do you still need humans as part of that process? How does the actual platform work?
So the platform is all data driven. You need humans to develop it. However, I will say that coming back to the question always of humans versus machines, inherently, there is always going to be a human factor on top of social data, particularly when there is more qualitative data to actually be able to apply it. So in the application of the data, that's where you need humans. I'm going to give you an example. Kantar, the market research organization, for example, they used to have some data people pulling data from different sources like Twitter, etc., combining it in a visualization and repurposing that for their clients. It used to take them each time a week, perhaps, with audience in the push of a button, and then some minutes, they have even more depth of data than what they used to get. So do you need those two people? Yes, you need those two people, because now you have to continue developing what other sources of data can we apply here? How can we overlay different types of data? How we can actually go from a visualization to the use case or the value application to our strategy? That's where you need the humans always. Without human factor, that's human technology, human AI, the machines will always fail for now.
And to get to the segments and the detail, the human needs to input what they're looking for, I assume, and then set it going on its task. But how long does it take after they put what they're looking for? Does the system pull out the different segments and all the granular detail? So, I guess that depends on what you put in, doesn't it? But in general.
Yeah, so first of all, how do you define this? The segment is interesting. Some people go about it in a demographic way. People who like beauty in Spain and they are 18 to 24 years old. That's a way. The more we look into that, the more sophisticated people get into the platform. They define audiences based on interests because that's what they are trying to find, but not the interest as beauty. They will input different brands, different influencer affinities, maybe magazines. They try to capture that interest graph of the user rather than actually defining the demographic plus an interest. That it's more generic. Once it's defined, it takes just minutes to get the full report. What we do in the background is at any time we are updating around 900 million follower graphs.
Wow.
And 900 million follower graphs means that once we actually get, if the audience was 100,000 users and they are following maybe 1,000 people and they are being followed by an average of 4,000, you can calculate and compound. It's a lot of network graph analysis that you do there. Then you get the segments, then you actually paint everything about them, personality, demographics, media affinity, channels, influencers and brands, all of that. But that all happens within 3-4 minutes, typically.
It's very impressive. And so it uses big data, which is obviously social media data.
My company, we don't like to say it's big data. Actually, my engineers, they say we work with mid-level data. This is not big data. Big data must be something else.
Okay, you want a zottabyte or something.
They say that social data is not big data. It's a dispute. The commercial team, we think it's big data. The engineering team, they consider that not to be big data.
Well, when you consider how much there is in a minute on social media, I consider it very big data.
But that's a very important point, because that's why, rather than having data scientists, we have data engineers. Because most of what we do in the platform is to establish the scalability of the infrastructure to be able to deploy and create those reports at scale in minutes. While the data scientist will work at the brand level to make sense out of it with the right person in the business.
Yeah. What about if you are putting something in, say you wanted to actually segment your own audience, your own brand's audience, and you put it in and you didn't actually have a huge following, does it still work in that sort of situation, or would you have to put in a competitor in?
Sure. We have brands that they don't even have a following, but their users are still in market, whether it's following other brands, following influential people within that market, whether it's following a magazine. There are so many ways. As I said, it's the way that you define it. If you don't have a following, it doesn't matter. your audience is in market.
They exist and you can
find
them.
That may be just the opportunity.
Interesting. And would you say there are any types of businesses that it doesn't work for?
No, and the reason for that is, well, there are some, obviously there must be some business that it doesn't work for. The one that actually doesn't need to be using social data, doesn't have to go out there. So the vegetable shop down mom and pop, down the market, that okay. they don't want to. This doesn't apply to them. They do door to door. Other than that, no. And the reason for that is because whether it's B2B or B2C, it works because segmentation based on who knows who is the best way to break down B2B audiences. If you think about it, one of the main problems of segmentation for B2B companies nowadays is enrichment of firmographics, that it's reliable. Mm-hmm. However, that even within a company, if you do interconnectivity analysis, you will find engineers and the commercial team split up. So you are even getting that type of segmentation that is quite interesting. For B2C brands, it always works, whether you are large or small. Actually, even for global brands, sometimes the problem is not to find the audience, to have enough. They have enough. So I'm thinking now of Adidas. Adidas has more than an audience. However, what our platform does is it breaks down the noise to the unit level that interested you to be able to work. So in the case of Adidas, if they are doing something like ocean conservation, they don't care about the people buying the shoes in that case. They care about ocean conservationists within my audience and outside my audience, how to understand that part. Social corporate responsibility, social initiatives that they have all these big brands, that's the biggest problem. Small brands sometimes is how do I develop my audience, how I understand the audience of these other brands. So I've given you the four quadrants. It kind of works in all directions.
Interesting.
Not for the vegetable shopper.
Well, depends on how they, if they had a particular USP, like they were very sustainable and something else, you might be able to actually use audience for them. Maybe. As well.
That would be fun. Big data for the vegetable retailer, yes.
Yes. Well, I think what you do is really interesting. What I also love about your offering is that you do have a free version, don't you? You offer a free version for the insights tool for a limited number. It's not for you can't do everything on it, but it's very nice that someone could actually come and try it and see how it works. And then if they really wanted to use it, they could keep going with the paid version.
It's a limited version.
Yeah.
Still, it delivers value. We see how even large agencies, they use it as a marketing tool because of the visualization. You can copy-paste it and it looks nice. Having said that, if anyone raises their hand, they get a full access trial as well. So we try to make sure that everyone gets the product. And in that case, we have the freemium, but as well, we have full trial access for anyone who asks for that, just to play, even if they apply to their business, it's okay.
Yeah.
So it's democratizing actionable audience insights or democratizing audience insights. If we don't have a free or a full access trial, what are we doing?
Yeah. I think the full access free trial is really powerful because then you get the full advantage of really understanding how it can work compared to the limited version. Really, really interesting stuff. Congratulations on everything you've achieved and getting it into these other tools. It's amazing. For anyone listening to this and wanting information on the tool, if you go to the audience website, which is audience.com, then sign up for the free tool, do a trial on the full version, free version of the full tool, and read about what they're doing with it. Thank you so much for your time today, Carlos. It's been fascinating, and I can't wait to play with the tool a bit more.
Thank you, Andre.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Business Growth with Dr. Andre Bates. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your business, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating wherever you download your podcasts. For more information on the subjects covered in this episode, links mentioned during the conversation, or to connect with Dr. Andre, click the link in the show notes now. Plus, make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.